Hi, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of Crime at the Family Table. We are on episode 4, so we are almost halfway through the season. I wanted to say hi, and also I'm here with, of course, my wonderful, amazing, and talented co-host, Alyssa. Alyssa, how you doing?
Thank you. So many things. I'm doing all right. I can't complain. I'm alive. I don't have my Beyonce tickets yet. So I guess that is my complaint, but I'm doing all right. Everybody's healthy. I ain't getting no bad phone calls. I'm good.
Listen, that's all we can hope for. Today, honestly, for me, I would say I've been really resting because, like, I had today off because of the good old President's Day. And as a side note, you know, it's crazy. Like, I remember when President's Day became a thing. Like, because it wasn't always the thing. Like, when we were in school, we used to get off for both holidays, like Abraham Lincoln's birthday and George Washington's birthday, which was both in February. And I'm guessing that the people was just like, no, we're just going to have a cohesive one day where we celebrate both birthdays, and that's just going to be that. We're done.
I just want them to make it a day where everybody has off, because I work today. So I kind of was like, womp, womp, womp.
Yeah, my job, for some reason, because, like, the job I work for, like, they're really about, like, community action and, like, stuff like that. So if you present to them, like, a day that you would like to have off as a holiday, they pretty much will do it. Like, you know, because so they kind of, I feel like they low-key, high-key follow the school district's calendar in a sense. Like, so whatever holidays they really get off of, except for the Jewish holidays, we kind of get. Most major things we get off. And yeah, it's pretty much done like that. And then, like, my supervisor, my director, she kind of just works it out where, like, some days, like the holidays that just passed, like in November and December, that, you know, we have half days as well. But sometimes, like, we can do it where it's full days. So we can get like 4 day, 5 day weekends. So we can get pretty much, you know, it's a little nice, a little nice, a little nice.
Actually, would not mind that at all.
Honestly, it's very relaxing, but the pay isn't that good. So, you know, here we are in capitalism.
We're in the helping professions, so they don't help us to those hefty paychecks like they should.
And this is where you lose me.
Exactly. So I was just looking something up real quick, but I'm excited about today's episode.
Yeah. I'm happy that, like, because last week we did a Black episode, like, all of the people from beginning to end, Black individuals. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because it's Black History Month, I think it's, like, you know, we wanted to have a few Black episodes to be put in here. However, like, I do want to put out there that the purpose of this show is not to disparage people, is not to be, you know, harmful in any way. It is simply to put out information that already exists and is truthful and honest. And I think that we can have an honest conversation by having all, like, parts of the spectrum of things. So we have to have big conversations that, you know, I'm sure our audience understands. And, you know, we can't please everybody because some people are going to have their feelings, but we are due to be respectful of all parties involved, even those in which if we could kick them while they're down, we would. Ray Caruth, I'm talking about you, baby. So
that was a doozy.
Doozy. And yeah, and also a side note to that, I would like also to mention that it kind of is semi-confirmed that he does live somewhere around Philadelphia.
I figured because, like, where else in Pennsylvania? I mean, there's plenty of places in Pennsylvania, but I figured when the way they mentioned it, I figured that it would be somewhere in or at least around Philly.
Yeah, because I think that, you know, he lives in probably like a offshoot county or whatever. But yeah, like he lives pretty close to Philadelphia. And I had a feeling also that it was probably true because, you know, as we know, he converted to Islam. So Philadelphia does have a really big Islamic community. Like literally around where I live at, there's a huge Muslim community, like masjids all around. So it's kind of, you know, there was he could find community here. Like it's like you want to definitely move somewhere where you're going to find community. So I definitely see it. So, you know, I haven't rolled past him or anything, but I'm just saying like potentially he might be within. And you know what, have you ever had that feeling like when you mention somebody that you haven't seen in a long time? Not to say I've ever seen Ray Caruso, but like to say like you haven't seen them and then all of a sudden you see them. Like I have a feeling that we're going to see this man out in these streets.
I'm gonna call you. I'm gonna be like, "What's that? That's all right for us."
Sad in real life in 4K.
Oh my god, I would freak out.
And shit, as long as his ass just stays away from Chancellor and Miss Sandra, that's all. Stay away from them. Mind your business. Stay where you be. That's all I got to say.
I'm glad we did that little follow-up on Ray Caruso. That was a good episode.
Same. Yeah, that most definitely. Like, it was a good episode because I feel like when we're talking about in the zeitgeist of, like, you know, celebrity crime, like, everybody always mentions, especially with football players, like, they always mention Aaron Hernandez is, like, a more recent case. Mm-hmm. But OJ. Yeah. Everybody always mentions OJ. OJ, OJ, OJ. It's like, okay, I'm tired of hearing about OJ. And he ain't the only one that's been out here acting a fool. So we need to be mentioning more, you know, more cases, especially ones where, like, we see, like, a man that served a substantial amount of time. Like, because OJ did not serve any time for the crime, you know, he was acquitted. So, you know, somebody that actually did serve time and, like, what that looks like for them and, like, what their life has been different because... In terms of OJ, like, his life really didn't change besides when he went to jail the second time. Like, when he went to jail, actually, for stealing back materials that he sold.
It was the stupidest. If I was... Okay, let me not veer too far off topic.
But it was very strange. But this week, we are doing a different kind of episode, but one I'm sure... you know, our older generation would kind of be familiar with. But low-key, I'm kind of familiar with simply because of Dreamgirls, because Eddie Murphy's character on Dreamgirls was, like, based on this topic of this episode. And so who is the topic of this week's episode? Let's give us some back, a little bit of something.
I'll just say, when I get that feeling,
when
I'm a sexual healer, I guess. In keeping with Black History Month, I thought it only fitting to do another very significant figure to close off this Black History Month season with none other than Marvin Gaye, the man of
sweet soul. Sweet soul.
Who I to this day think is so handsome.
It's that smile.
Mm-hmm.
It's that smile. He just sung so sweetly. I consider him like sweet soul music and people like Teddy Pendergrass, like hard mm-hmm. soul. Like Teddy gonna scream to get out your draw.
But they were more like sensual. You know, yeah. Today we got like WAP and Suki, why is it the first thing that pops in my mind? Like Sukihana, like more like in your face, like sexy. Using the words and just sex, sex, sex. But these yeah. gentlemen, especially Marvin Gaye, was more sensual, more like, let me light some candles and give you a rose and you take
right.
a
bath. Like you got a dark room, it's like a strip tease.
Yes. Instead of just like, I came over naked. Like,
I'm booty naked. Come on.
That's a high take. So for today's episode, we will be doing Marvin Gaye. Just a disclaimer, I don't know if this should be disclaimed, but we are going to be talking about father-son relationships, abuse, religion, things of that nature. So if any of those things trigger you, a sprinkle of LGBT, if any of those things trigger you, you might want to listen to a different episode. And that's okay. Every episode isn't for everybody. So I will, unless you have anything to say, I will jump right on in.
Yep, you can go on right on in, girl. I'm ready to hear this because I just remember hearing about this from, like, mentioned briefly, but not too much. Like, I just knew that this event happened. I knew that, you know, his death, it was very tragic, and it echoed through the things of music. Because, like, soul music in and of itself can be kind of tragic. Like, soul singers and Black artist music has been, like, trifled with tragedy, if you will. So honestly, his death kind of being kind of one of those was not 100% shocking.
It's tragic stories for a lot of those artists back then, but let's dive in. So Marvin Pence Gay Jr., G-A-Y, was born April 2nd, 1939 in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
I didn't know. I don't know why I thought he was from New York.
Same. I don't know why either. What?
This way. So he was born to Marvin Gaye Sr. and Alberta Gaye. Now, Marvin Gaye Sr. was a Seventh-day Adventist preacher, but they were a part of a sect called the House of God. So I don't know. I'm Baptist, so I don't know much about Seventh-day Adventists. But I do remember we had to sing, because I was on the choir. We had to sing at a Seventh-day Adventist church. And I think they wore, I might be getting them confused with Pentecostal. Sorry, folks, if I'm getting them confused. But I feel like they look like doilies to me. On their heads, and they had on like really long jean skirts.
Yeah.
But that was also back in the early 2000s. So
no, I think it's still the same. Like I've met people that were like Seventh-day Adventists. They, So Seventh-day Adventist is very interesting because the part of the Bible that they believe from is different from Baptist. So they uphold the central doctrine of Protestant Christianity, the Trinity, the incarnation, the virgin birth, the atonement, justification by faith, creation, the second coming, and the resurrection of the dead and last judgment. That's like just a brief kind of reading from them. I do know that they do not wear pants. Like that is not something like the women are like the women are supposed to wear like long skirts.
And I feel like they go to church on Saturday.
Correct.
And not Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
But they were a part of that particular church, like I said, in a different sect called the House of God. So, and I think their particular sect was even more strict.
And they believe in the Sabbath.
Yes. I think that's why they go to church on Saturday.
Right.
Instead of Sunday.
Yeah, it's in church, which they believe to be the Sabbath instead of Sunday, according to their interpretation of the Bible. Yep. So they probably have kind of like a mix up, like, because I know some people that say the Sabbath, but like they do the Sabbath, they are Christians, they aren't Seventh-day Adventists, only because they kind of take it from like the Bible actuality. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. Read your Bible, people. If you believe, read your Bible, learn for yourself, because I've found that people, like you just said, interpretations may vary. So figure it out for yourself, because we be interpreting things all different types of ways. But this particular sect went by a very strict code of conduct, like you said, not being able to wear pants as women. They didn't practice celebration of holidays or birthdays. So to me, that sounds very similar to Jehovah's Witnesses.
Right.
So Marvin Jr. was known as a free spirit. And according to his sister, Jeanne, their father, like, he couldn't understand it. Like, he was a very strict, by the book type of person and a pastor, and he just couldn't understand why Marvin was just so free and aloof. Marvin Sr. was actually very physically abusive. And of course, like everybody back in those days, you got a whooping, which is culturally appropriate. A lot of parents are shifting, especially Black parents, we're shifting to trying to discipline our children a little differently. But back then, You did something that your parents didn't agree with, you got a whooping. But his dad was whooping them just if he didn't like something. Like, I don't think it always was necessarily discipline for them doing something wrong. But if they, of course, if they misbehaved, but I think if they did something that he just didn't agree with, then it got, it gave real Joe Jackson.
Right. It wasn't like necessarily like a disciplinary, but it was kind of moldish. Like, he's trying to like mold them into what he wants, like into actions that he deems to be okay.
Exactly. And I feel like Marvin being that free spirit, he was too far away from that. Like, he was getting too far and far away, which is a whole control thing too. He's the man of the house. He's the father. He's a pastor. So he has people following him, quote unquote, following him. And for your child to be disobedient or not listen to you and you don't have no control over them because they're such a free spirit, that would piss you off. So he was very physically abusive, and between him and Marvin, there started to be like some anger and resentment in their relationship from off rip from the beginning. So early on in his music career, Marvin Gaye was actually a doo-wop singer, and he joined like a number of doo-wop groups. But he ended up with a group called the Marquees. Later, they changed their name, like a movie, a theater marquee. Later, they changed their name to the Moon Glows. Which I was like, all right.
It's a trick.
That was a decision. But after they had a concert in Detroit, they broke up. I don't know what happened, but they called it quits. And Marvin got introduced to Berry Gordy at Motown Records. If you don't know, Berry Gordy is the founder of Motown Records. He's also Diana Ross' baby daddy, but we'll come back to that. And he first signed Marvin actually as a drummer, so he wasn't even making music as an R&B singer yet until a year later when Berry Gordy signed him as an artist. So initially Marvin was singing, he was singing more like jazz, Broadway music, but in the, how do I say this, in the black market back in the 60s, it wasn't really no market. Like, no audience for that. A black man singing jazz and Broadway music. Like, that wasn't going to be, like, mainstream successful. So he was convinced to do R&B. And eventually, that gained him some hit records. But Marvin didn't want to be put in a box. Like I said earlier, he was a free spirit. So he didn't want to be put in a box as, like, a crooner that was just going to be singing love songs. He wanted to sing pop. More towards the side of Nat King Cole and Frank Sinatra. He wanted to go that way. Enter Tammy Terrell, who I love. She just was so cute.
My girl, listen, the most adorablest. Like, I don't know what it is. Like, she was just so cute.
She just seemed really sweet. Okay, so by this point in his career, Tammy Terrell gets introduced into the situation. And they began making music. Of course, if you know Ain't No Mountain High, that probably was one of their like biggest hits, maybe, or most notable, I should say. Of course, You're All I Need to Get By, which was sampled by Mary J. Blige and Method Man, which that was also a huge hit. Four of them. and of course, a bunch of other songs that they did together. There was always, which I remember feeling that way, there was always rumors of them having like a romantic relationship, but it was never like that. Like, they were legit, they felt brother and sister. Like, that's how they viewed each other. Like, they were super close.
One thing I remember though was I used to watch the Temptation movie multiple. And a huge scene I remember was like the big Motown cookout. And Tammy was there, and she came with Marvin. Like, she was talking to Marvin, but apparently she was dating David Ruffin. And he was very jealous of that relationship that they had. And like, that was just like a brief like window into things. Like, dang, Tammy Terrell was like that girl.
She was that girl. I feel like she was probably like I don't even know. Was she like the Rihanna of her time?
Right. Like, I'm like, who is she comparatively to? Like, I'm like, because she has so much amazing talent. So you can't, you know, say like for somebody like, because she was as cute as a button, as she was kind of girl next door.
Yeah.
Like the girl, like she wasn't, and I think that also that she had that sweet little voice, and she, you know, could sing, and she was so little, and she was, you know, a hot commodity because she was being pushed too, like, you know, definitely in the, I guess,
What?
music art, she was pushed forward as this artist.
And she was very successful. And like you said, she was in love with David Ruffin from The Temptations. Which that's so funny. I remember that scene too at the cookout. Of course, David Ruffin is notoriously David Ruffin. I don't know how to
Because
explain him. He was full of himself. He thought everybody was just coming to see him, which the man had talent. You can't deny it. He just seeing like glimpses of who Tammy Terrell was and then seeing glimpses of David Ruffin, it was like, oh, I can see why they were together. Because he was kind of like the, you know, he was that guy. You know, ladies loved him and he probably made her feel real, real special, but he was jealous of their relationship, even though if they were both still alive to this day, they would be like, we were more like brother and sister. So while performing at Hampton University's homecoming, which can we take a second? If you were around Hampton University around the 60s, can you admit, which those people will probably be in their like 70s at this point, they were in college then. Can you imagine going, like telling your grandchildren or children, like, oh yeah, at my homecoming, we had an opening act. It was Tammy Terrell and Marvin Gaye. Like,
Right, it was so light. It
that
was so crazy because recently, like at the Grammys, Lizzo had mentioned about the time she saw Destiny's Child perform at a Walmart.
yes.
Like, imagine.
You were a part of history. Like that is crazy. But unfortunately, while performing at that homecoming, Tammy collapsed on stage. And eventually they found out she had a brain tumor. Her health really started declining, which actually, because of their closeness, because of their relationship, it put Marvin into a depression. But he really was like upset. Around the same time, though, he got his first number one hit, I Heard It Through the Grapevine, which
Definitely.
I was about to say, a personal jam of mine. But he refused to acknowledge his success. He just was like, okay, cool, cool beans. Because, of course, his friend's health is declining. His marriage was actually starting to crumble with his first wife, Anna.
Wow.
And at the time, like this, just the social and political climate at the time was starting to be addressed in music, and he just felt like this is something that I need to be talking about in my music. I don't need to be doing these love songs. Like, I really don't care. I need to be addressing something that has some significance to me and my people. So that's when we start to notice his music shift. But unfortunately, Tammy Terrell died of brain cancer in March of 1970. And I believe she was only like 24.
Yeah, actually, it's crazy. I'm just reading something like briefly about her is that when she before she was dating David Ruffin, she was in a relationship with James Brown, who was when she was 17, and he was 12 years her senior, and he used to basically beat her black and b blue.
James Brown was crazy, y'all.
Yeah,
He
James
was
Brown,
crazy.
like James Brown, like this is like literally a quote from Otis Williams, another member of the Temptations.
Ain't nobody coming to see you, Otis. Cause
Honey,
was. I'm
me.
sorry. Nobody was coming to see you, Otis. We were
Nobody, but he's surviving. Like
Listen,
this is
he,
he's
I
the
think
only
y'all
one here to tell the story. And we couldn't get into Otis because Otis is a clown, but that's
forgot.
David Ruffin could be rough on women at times. When you're out on the road like we were, you hear and see things. We all knew about Tammy and James Brown. We knew how James was about women, that he would flip a woman's ass. And back then, you wouldn't ever get the woman's side, so people would assume, fairly or not, he flipped her ass because she provoked him.
I don't give a good god. Okay, it was the time.
He's dating a minor. She was a minor. That's she has a very short, literally, she only lived 7 years after that. That's crazy. In such a short amount of time, she's dealt with abusive men. That's scary. But the only good relationship she really had with a man was Marvin.
At that time, yeah.
Damn.
He can, their relationship contributed to her, career success, all of that. I'm sure they were, able to talk to each other and confide in each other. And that is really sad. I didn't know about James Brown. Because, when they in Motown and they in, that industry, it's only a select few Black people who was, big like that at the time. So, James Brown was that bull, too. So.
Right. And they're all kind of close to each other. They would ride on the road together. In the Temptations movie, again, they will all be on the same bus together. Mm-hmm. Blue had dated somebody from the Supremes, they were all on the same, because they would just tour the same circuit.
And you think you spend that much time together in close proximity, what you think gonna happen? A bunch of young, sexy people,
right? Just filling up on each other, getting hot and heavy.
So Marvin's depression actually worsened, and he didn't perform a concert for 2 whole years. Wow. After she died. So he channeled all that pain eventually in the studio to create What's Going On, which I think is his biggest hit. But he made What's Going On. Barry Gordy actually was like, no, this is a cute song, but no, we're not putting this out. And he was pissed. He was like, basically, I'm not doing anything else if you don't release this song. So eventually Barry Gordy was like, all right, fine. Because he thought because it was politically based and talked about social justice issues, that the people weren't going to buy it. And of course, as the head of Motown Records, you're thinking money. You're thinking, what is going to make us money? What's going to be the big hit that's going to draw in the numbers? So he didn't really care about the message, but of course, Marvin did. So he finally was able to put it out. It was a big hit. But again, free spirit, Marvin chose to switch gears and get sexy. So he released Let's Get It On after that.
Ooh.
Yeah. So he went from What's Going On to Let's Get It On.
Right. He was like, I'm gonna be out. I'm a civil rights leader out in the streets, but I'm a sexy beast in the sheep.
That is hilarious. Those two things together. Okay, so fun fact. I think while he was recording something, or him and Diana Ross were supposed to be recording a duet album, because Marvin did a lot of duet albums, and I think that's kind of what you did back then with your record mate. So, of course, he did the albums with Tammy Terrell. He did albums with, what's her name from Ashford and Simpson? Is Ashford Simpson, Valerie Simpson?
It's Ashford and Simpson, yep.
Simpson is the woman, but he did it with Valerie Simpson. He did records with her. And then he was up to do, I think his last duet album was going to be with Diana Ross. So if you didn't know, Marvin Gaye was an avid weed smoker. And of course, back then you could smoke anywhere as far as cigarettes or whatever. So he was smoking in the studio. But Diana Ross was pregnant at the time with Tracy Ellis Ross.
Iconic!
Can you get any more? You were in the studio with Marvin Gaye before you were even born.
Crazy.
So she was pregnant with Tracy Ellis at the time, and he was just puffing these marijuana cigarettes, because that's what they called it back then. He was smoking the weeds. And she was like, excuse me, I'm pregnant here. Can you stop? And he was like, no. So she, of course, she went to Mary Gordy, because I believe the daughter before Tracy, it was either a daughter or two daughters before Tracy is by Berry Gordy.
Right. Yeah, like her oldest daughter is by Berry Gordy.
I believe her oldest daughter's name is Rhonda. I think it's Rhonda Chudney and then Tracy.
Crazy. Yep.
So she had already had her baby with Berry Gordy a bit 2 babies ago. But you know, she got that baby mom pool. So she was like, Barry, tell him like something gotta give. Talk to Marvin. Marvin still wasn't having it. So they ended up having two recording in two separate studio sessions and then dubbing their voices together on the record. Cause she wasn't having it, he wasn't having it. And I guess they both had big enough pull for them not to have to agree on something.
Listen, if you pay, if both people paying the bills, if the record's paying the bills, I guess we're gonna have to make it happen, Kevin.
So at this point, Marvin's music is getting more sensual, which really pisses his dad off. Because, like I said, his father's a preacher, very strict sect of the church. So he's like, this music is getting too sexy. Like, this is like the equivalent of WAP back in that day. He's like, whoa, 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 let's get it on. Sexual healing. What are you doing here?
Right. It's not even inconspicuous. Like he's talking about sex.
So, like I said, he and his father always had tension and anger within their relationship. Here's another reason why there was always something going on in their relationship. And this is a legend. And this is where Marvin Gaye's death for me always started. This is why I heard he died in the first place. His father shot him. So at age 12, allegedly, Marvin walked in on his father wearing his mother's clothes. I remember every time I'd be like, oh, how did Marvin Gaye die? My dad would always tell me, who is, and my dad is like a super Black history guy. He would always tell me his dad was a cross dresser. This is the terms that he used, people. His dad was a cross dresser. Marvin found out, and the dad shot him. It's just in the research that I've done, they said it's a rumor. We don't know if that's the case.
I mean, something is telling me that it's quite possible that, especially when you're talking about this relationship, is that you have two people that are very different and that see the world very differently. Like her, his father probably believes that he has to hold in who he is. Whoever he is has to be behind closed doors. And that Marvin is living in his truth and his and wants to live as free as he wants to be as a bird. And he's mad at him for being able to do that because who he is not able to do that. And Marvin is getting paid to be able to do that.
How about that? So that was another point of tension. Marvin is this big star. Of course, he gonna look out for his family, especially back then. That's what you did. You know, let me buy my mama a house. Let me do all these things, take them here and there. So at first, his father always tried to make it seem like, oh, this money doesn't mean anything to me. Like, and you're the fact that you're making your money like this, you know, clutch my pearls, clutch my pearls. But in reality, if you let other people tell it, Marvin's dad really, he was feeling the fact that they had money. Like he was feeling the trips and the just the open doors to things, like the opportunities that it brought, the fact that his son was famous. Like he was really underneath it all, really like into it. And it was not a secret that he was cheating on Marvin's mom, pastor and all, was cheating on Marvin's mom with a number of women. It wasn't just a one-time thing, like he was cheating. And of course he probably used them, you know, my son is Marvin Gaye thing. I'm sure that came up, but he wasn't so innocent. Side note, Marvin Gaye, that's why I said in the beginning, G-A-Y. He was born G-A-Y, but eventually during his music career, he changed it to G-A-Y-E. He added the E at the end. Because he used to get teased as a kid. Obvious, the most obvious thing is like Marvin's gay. So he added the E at the end to be able to kind of separate from that, which also added an additional tension to his father because he's a junior And for you to add that E, it's like, oh, my name ain't good enough for you. So,
Yeah, his dad was a hater.
thank you. That's what I said when I was doing this research. I was like, he was hating. He was hating that he was successful. He was hating that he was able to provide his family with something that he couldn't provide as just a preacher. And that's nothing to take away from preachers, because obviously now we see all these mega churches and preachers are freaking thousandaire and millionaires at this point. But Marvin Gaye Sr. was not preaching at no mega church. He wasn't rolling in the dough like that from preaching. And he wasn't getting that type of notoriety either. He was not Martin Luther King. So, or Aretha Franklin daddy. So he wasn't getting notoriety and the recognition and the money that his son was. And he was a hater. So of course he released more music, some of them kind of, not to say they flopped, because they became number one, but they aren't like his most notable songs. Like they were hits, number ones for his time, but they weren't things that we would be able to recall unless you listen to like a whole entire Marvin Gaye album before. But we know songs like Gotta Give It Up. If you are a child of the 90s, you might know that Aaliyah remade the song. She covered it. Is it the right thing? She covered Gotta Give It Up. Which I love both versions, but that one became a hit. But unfortunately, his at-home life was unraveling. He divorced his wife, his first wife, Anna. And he agreed to actually give a portion of his salary and sales of his upcoming album to her for alimony. So all that was going to go to her for alimony.
Wow.
Yeah. So in 1978, he released Here, My Dear, which addressed the sour points of his marriage to Anna. And it actually almost led to her filing an invasion of privacy against Marvin. Though she later like took that, she recanted, she took it back. And she changed her mind, but she was about to file a lawsuit for invasion of.
Well, actually, you know what's crazy? It's like I heard about that, but the whole crazy part I think is that the reason why she dropped it was simply because after he had died, it was beneficial to her because all his music went up, and she paid it because that song, that out like was hers basically. When you pay, and if you ever say you dedicate something to somebody, when you pass, that person can benefit from that dedication.
And especially back then, they didn't have a lot of these things put in place that we do now. So she probably did get a little piece of change from it. But the album tanked. That's why we never heard of it, because it flopped. Triple cardboard. So he, at that point, he was like really struggling to sell a record. He eventually started having tax problems. Not only was Marvin Gaye known for being a heavy weed smoker, he started to dibble and dabble in the cocaine. Which,
As they do, that's the
which,
40 for you.
if you've seen the Temptations movie, if you've seen any of those stories of the, especially the black artists back then, you know they were doing some drugs. And that just was the scene for celebrities like in the 70s and 80s to do coke. You snort a little line of coke, you go out perform. But he was really getting like a heavy addiction to it. On top of, let's not forget, he's still depressed. He still has depression. Even though he's trying to move forward, he still has depression. He's still got, I would safe to say, trauma from the physical abuse growing up. His relationship with his father, things like that. So eventually he filed for bankruptcy, and he actually moved to Hawaii, where he lived in a bread van. Why he lived in a bread van in Hawaii?
I mean, it's Marvin Gaye. He's a free spirit. Listen.
Listen, I mean, I was like, in the 80s, we're living like that, but all right, okay. So eventually in 1980, he signed with a British promoter to do concerts overseas. What? Okay, so keep in mind, he's got a drug addiction. At this time, when he was gonna do the performance in the UK, he didn't make it to the stage on time. By the time he came, everybody had left. He pulled a Lauryn Hill. He showed up late.
Lord.
Showed up late. Everybody had left already. You know, them British people was pissed. They
They
don't
was
know nothing about CP time. So while in London, he started working on a record called In Our Lifetime, which he wanted to get really deeply personal. And then when Motown put the album out in 1981, Marvin Gaye was pissed because he accused Motown of editing and remixing the album without his permission. They released like an unfinished song. They messed with album's artwork that he requested. And In Our Lifetime actually had a question mark, and they removed the question mark from the title. So he was pissed the way they put it out. He's like, this is not my art. This is not what I wanted. So he permanently moved to Belgium in 1981. He just flip-flopping all over the world at this point. So after being upset with Motown, he negotiated a release from the label, and then he signed with Columbia Records in 1982. Well, he's been with Motown since like the late 60s, and now in 1982, he signed with Columbia and released Midnight Love the same year, right? So that album had his final big hit, Sexual Healing. And that gave
Healing.
him his first two Grammys. Mind you, he's been singing since the 60s. Finally, in 1982, he got his first two Grammy Awards, one for Best R&B Male Vocal Performance and Best R&B Instrumental, which I don't know if they have that category anymore, in 1983. And then the following year, he got nominated for Best R&B, Male R&B Vocal Performance again for the whole album itself. Around that same time, he did the Star Spangled Banner at one of the NBA All-Star games.
Yes, he did, and that thing was, he was singing that thing,
He
baby.
is
My
definitely
voice,
going.
I don't care all the drugs, the voice never flopped.
It never crackled, crinkled, folded. We done seen some people's vocals get that cocaine just come in and just disintegrate the vocal cord.
Dangles it around, shakes it up, and puts it back in, and they be trying to sing on that thing.
Cause may she rest in peace. But Nippy,
Baby,
I was like, oh no. But he
it was,
sounded.
but then she got better because, like, I think she went in and got vocal training. Like, but
Yeah.
I just think, baby, when you're hearing the crack, when the voice ain't hitting that pitch like it's supposed to, time to go get the vocal coach, especially as a woman, because women, we have to deal with a lot. Because apparently, when you, I didn't know this, but when you give birth, your voice can become deeper.
That's true. So many things happen when you give birth, but that's another episode for another time because they don't explain all that when they're like, oh, have children, like.
Baby, why don't you? Like,
That's a
what?
lot.
No, where's the lady with the list?
Yeah, because some of us would have no children if they gave you the whole list. So a month after that, he gave his final performance in, at the Motown 25. And if anyone has seen the Motown 25, it's one of like, for me, I feel like it's an amazing showcase of course, all the Motown artists, but Motown 25 is where Michael Jackson debuted the moonwalk. And he really came out as a solo artist. People went nuts. It was a fantastic show.
For the ages, apparently, like stuff that went on there, like it was just the who's who. Think of like Diddy's White Party,
Yes.
like epic proportions.
Of every like. My mom still talks about it this day, mainly for the Michael Jackson, but she remembers watching it, like watching it live as it was happening in Motown 25. But he sang What's Going On. And then eventually he went on a US tour to support that particular his Midnight Love album. But he ended up having health problems, of course, the drug addiction, still depressed. He eventually started also developing paranoia because there was, allegedly, according to him, there was an attempt on his life in like August of 1983. They don't go into like full detail about that, but he was paranoid that somebody was out to get him and out to end his life.
Well, I can believe him because apparently the government at a big point in time was watching a lot of those artists that were making songs like that. Like it was a huge thing. Like the CIA was watching artists. I think I think Aretha Franklin actually had like a watch out on her as well as Maya Angelou. Like they had watch on them and do not like I would have to look this up, but yeah, like apparently like they have like files on a lot of these big voices in the civil rights music and art because they felt like, oh, like if they wanted to do something, they would try to sneak it in the music. So yeah,
they were the influencers of their time.
Yeah,
but I did hear about that Aretha Franklin. I believe that one is true too. So he starts getting paranoid. He starts to isolate himself. He moved back in with his parents. Once the tour ended, and he just is increasingly paranoid, getting more and more depressed. His mom starts like helping to take care of him, like mentally and physically, emotionally, because he's just no good at this time. He threatened to commit suicide several times after a bunch of arguments with his father, of course. And so it was speculated that his father was also jealous because his mom was spending a lot of time with Marvin, like, you know, trying to like nurse him back to health emotionally, help him out, like, you know, cooking dinner for him, helping him like with his laundry, things a mom would do really for a child or for like a younger son. But she was doing this for him. And I believe, you know, once again, he's getting attention. Now you're not just getting attention from everybody. Everywhere you're getting attention from my wife now. So he was at the center of her attention, which added to the tension between him and his father. So unfortunately, excuse me, on April 1st, 1984, the day before his 45th birthday, Marvin Gaye's father shot and killed him after an argument that has started over misplaced business documents. Apparently there was some, I want to say it was like an insurance policy that Marvin was looking for, couldn't find it. Him and his dad started like going back and forth about it. And then Marvin Gaye's dad has said like, oh, he felt threatened. Marvin Gaye actually gave him a gun because he was fearing for his life. He gave his dad a gun. And then, you know, eventually he moves back in with the family. They have this argument. The father shoots him with that same gun that Marvin gave him before. So he was actually sentenced to 6 years of probation after pleading guilty to manslaughter. When they came, I think the brother, Marvin Gaye's brother, heard all the commotion. The mom was like freaking out, like, he just, you know, he just shot him. The brother came, but the brother didn't realize what was going on at first. He was calling for Marvin. And then when he realized like Marvin wasn't responding back to him, he found the whole scene. Of course they called 911. And eventually, like, I think the mom escorted the dad out the house. Like, yeah, he's the one that shot him. Like I said, he was charged with first degree murder. No. They dropped the charges of first-degree murder after doctors discovered that Marvin Gaye's dad had a tumor. So eventually he lived his final years in a retirement home and he died of pneumonia in 1998.
Honestly, this just sounds like a man who never really cared about his son. Mm-hmm. And I'm reading something here about like the fact that like even the mom could say like he never loved Marvin. Like, that Marvin Sr. never loved Marvin Jr. and like he wanted her not to love him. Like the crazy part is like the worldwide love that Marvin received was just was really just like, I feel like Marvin Sr. couldn't even handle that. Like, you're beloved by so many people. And I can't even imagine how, you know, you took a father away from his kids. You took a member of the community away. You took someone who was beloved away, and you just, over something so, so petty. And the fact that you're saying, well, I was scared. Y'all had never, like, there was never, I feel like, an explanation that they had ever gotten to, like, physical fights.
No, not a mutual back and forth.
Like, I feel like they would just argue, because I feel like it was just really arguments, and I just don't understand why his dad felt the need to just do something so crazy. And like, I think that it's just always been welling up inside of him. Like, he's just always been welling up, and I feel like had Marvin never come back home, he would just never have had this type of opportunity.
Just the resentment.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, but like you said, if he would have just kept touring and going about his career, they would have had that distance between them. But I mean, who knows? Maybe he would come home one holiday and then something like that would have happened. But there's also rumors, because there's a lot of rumors and speculation around this story. And there was a rumor that Marvin purposely gave the gun to his dad because he was depressed and he knew that his dad had the potential to shoot him. So he gave him the gun with that knowledge to get his dad to end his own life, basically. Like, to get his dad to end his life.
That's believable, because it's kind of like murder by cop.
Yeah.
Suicide by cop.
So that was a rumor too.
I feel like it could have been definitely a mixture of it, but at the end of the day, the choice was his dad. The fact that the dad was even capable of doing that is very sad. That you would even think, like, even if that was true, like, that you would think that your dad was capable. And I'm sure, like, you know, it's so crazy to think that, you know, your dad just dislikes you. Like, it's even, Alberta even says, like, that the Marvin Sr. tried to basically say that, like, Marvin Jr. wasn't his.
Girl,
look just alike. Even the baldness that they were receiving, like, what, sir? You cannot be for real.
Alberta was a nice lady. She ain't bother nobody. He was the one cheating on her. Like, what?
And literally, when you look up Marvin Gaye, like on Google, it literally says born and assassinated, like that his father assassinated him
the day before his 45th. That is crazy to me.
That's crazy. And it's so sad to just know that, you know, that he didn't even have peace in that space. Yeah. And, you know, artists really weren't making like a ton of money, like, and, you know, as they are now. So it's crazy to think, like, nowadays, like, people who need help, like, he could have checked himself into some place, like, nowadays, like, checked himself in. He could have been supported by, like, a nursing staff or, like, some staff to come in to support him. But because, you know, maybe because he was also not trusting of people, like, because of the paranoia, he probably wouldn't have. But it's just saying, like, there's more options these days that could have been taken that would have potentially saved his life. It's really sad. Like, I'm like, so messed up about this, because father relationships, especially in the Black community, are so crazy. And we always talk about, like, you know, the absent father, but like, this father was there and he just wasn't shit.
He was physically present, but he did not meet the emotional needs of his son, unfortunately. Instead of, like, being supportive and, like, nurturing that free-spiritedness and finding a way to help guide him in the right direction and just being a cheerleader, he was really a hater. Like,
big time.
Oh,
I don't know. I don't remember you mentioning this, but probably the reason why Marvin had so much pull at Motown is because Barry Gordy is his former brother-in-law.
That's right. I forgot to mention that he did, excuse me, he did marry, I forget her name, Gordy.
Anna Gordy.
Oh, it was Anna, was his first wife. Yep.
Yep. So that's why he kind of like, dang, my breath. I listen to this man. And then my baby mama coming to me and my brother.
Listen, Barry kept a lot of things in house. Like your baby mom is one of your artists. Your brother-in-law is one of your artists, even though, of course, he was an artist before he became his brother-in-law. Then one of the Jackson Five marries your daughter.
Yes.
He's just keeping it in the family.
Motown was just a whole like if you like Barry Gordy was Big Daddy to a cult. Like
He was a money-making machine.
he just like listen, we need babies. We need babies now.
He was making that money, honey. Although I'm sure there are plenty of things about Barry Gordy that I'm actually interested in knowing. I would love to be a fly on the wall.
On some of the discussions and some of the things, and also like I would love to understand like did like were was there ever a chance for Marvin and Barry to ever mend their relationship? Because it seemed like it ended on pretty bad terms.
Yeah, because the last thing they said before he moved to Columbia, that he was pissed that they completely changed his whole thing, his whole vision of what he wanted the album to be. So I don't know. Maybe they were able to, but I no, they were. Well, I don't know if that's really a mending of it, but when he went back to do Motown 25, he was invited to do Motown 25, so hopefully there they got a chance to talk and mend things.
Well,
Unless he did it for
this
the
is pretty
good.
sad, but you know what? We got some wonderful music out of it. Well, I mean, sadly, this is where we end with everything, you guys. Hopefully you guys got some newer information that we didn't know about the late and great Marvin Gaye, known as the Prince of Soul. And thank you so much. It was like a really good 10 out of 10 flowers, throwing flowers. And next week, you guys taking a break week because I got to do some research for the next episode. So we will see, you will hear from us in about 2 weeks. So we will see you then. Bye.
Bye. Happy end of Black History Month.